Hello and welcome to The Shape of Work, a podcast series by SpringWorks. My name is Anoop and I am your host. Each week, we'll be talking to top people managers across the world on the future of work and how it's shaping our workplace. So sit back and get ready to find out more from these movers and shakers as we have a no-holds-barred, anything-goes conversation with them about their journey, their insights, their thoughts, and most importantly, their ideas and vision for the workplace of the future. Join in on the conversation, leave a comment, and don't forget to hit that subscribe button.
Welcome to the Shape of Work podcast, Stephen. How are you doing today?
Really good. It's early in the morning for me. Well, sort of early. I've been to the gym. I'm good. Ready to go. It's great to be here.
Fantastic, fantastic. Before we get into some of the questions and themes that I sort of want to discuss with you, get your perspectives on, can you tell us, our listeners, a bit about your journey? What do you do? And how have things shaped up?
Yeah, no problem. My company is called Certain Change because that is one of the certainties of the world. Things are going to change. And I've had that since 2002. I started that in 2002. And it's an unusual journey. I like working with individuals, management leaders, especially entrepreneurs, but entrepreneurial leaders. That's my thing, because they like to get things done. They do things. They take action. And I specifically work with people who, it's in two ways. Where the individual knows that they're underperforming, but they don't know why. So it's almost like, I know I could do this. I know what I should be doing. I know I need to take the action, but they won't let themselves. They hold themselves back. So I work with individuals, either the owners themselves, usually starts with the owners, but often they then get me to work with their team when they say, oh, one of my directors is definitely holding themselves back. But also like working with the directors and the management team, because most people don't have any training, support, development on how to be a good leader and good manager. And it's one of the most talked about, whispered things, but rarely ever dealt with. And it's one of the most valuable things you can do. So it's individual performance and team performance. You know, underperforming, shouldn't be. Why? I don't know. Stephen, help. So that's my thing. My career pathway confuses people a lot because I came out of school. I was top set of everything, but I came out of school hating school. And it wasn't until years later when I started my first business, I realized I was an entrepreneur. And the school system didn't really fit with me, because a classic story. But because I came from a family background of professional, my dad was a police officer, my mum's a teacher. Being an entrepreneur running a business, it was like, yeah, nobody does that in my family. I didn't have a clue. So I started my first business, but I started my first business as a physiotherapist.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So 26, I'd done my training, started my first business, and I loved it. And I thought I was running a business, until I realized later on I was running a job, but it was my own job. I was earning more money. I was happy. I had autonomy. I had time, freedom. And then I noticed something that really puzzled me. I was very busy, had happy clients, but this is where my career pathway actually quite quickly took a different direction. Mm-hmm. And I got really interested in how people think and behave, because when I was saying to my clients who are coming in with really bad shoulders, bad backs, you know, sprained ankles, and they came in real physical pain, they had to take time off from work, they couldn't do their hobbies, you know, they were paying me money to help them me fix them. But when I gave them advice or coaching, you know, don't sit in front of a computer for 8 hours, don't, you know, do these exercises, stop doing that. Most people, 60%, I would say, took my advice, got better faster, pay me less money, happier, return to work. Makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But about 40% of people didn't. And I was like, and I kept saying this to people, and it was like, I'm going to give up saying this to you because you just never do it.
Yeah.
But I got really curious. And the most common answers were, well, I did it a bit, but I was busy. Or, yeah, I forgot. I know I should have done it. But my favorite one was, and they didn't know why. They didn't know why they weren't helping themselves. They just had no idea. And they were confused as I was. So I really started to get into, why do people do this? And I asked myself a question that really changed my career trajectory. which was, if we do this when we're in acute physical pain, really acute physical problems, when, where else do we do it?
Correct.
The answer is everywhere.
Yep.
We do it in our health. We do it in our work. We do it with money. We do it with relationships. And I spent the last 20 years looking at what I call sabotage loops, how people know they should be doing something, but then a part of their brain goes, no, you can't do that. It's too risky. It's too dangerous. Imposter syndrome, all the reasons, all the thinking that stops us doing from what we are capable of doing. So the first thing I often do with people who are, this is the individuals underperforming, is help them understand why they're doing it. Because when you understand it, you can turn it off. And then the real you that knows you should be doing the thing just gets on with it.
Yeah.
So very fast turnaround of results, because they, it's like most people say, it's like an argument in their head. It's like there's two people.
Yeah.
I want to do this. I won't let myself. I want to. So, and so in terms of business, as a business leader, for example, they have ambition, but they're driving with the foot on the brake. And it depends which part of their brain is in control, is deciding the success of the company. So you turn that off, you take the brake off, people fly. So that's why I like working with entrepreneurs, because and business leaders, entrepreneurial business leaders, even if it's a bigger company, it's because if they're holding themselves back, then they know what they can do. They're highly frustrated, but then they start moving forward. And then it's the next thing is, okay, how do we keep the management team and then the their teams to catch up with the leader who's suddenly now sprung forward? So it's good fun. I enjoy it. Gets amazing results. I have a good time. But yeah, so it came from my physiotherapy days 26 plus years ago, spotting something and then just researching it for years now. That's my favorite thing anyway. Does that give you an idea? That's my
cool pathway. Definitely does. And very, very interesting. You know, a couple of things that I picked up from there is one, of course, where you brought up how some of the managers can't really transition into becoming leaders. And you would be surprised how often I ask that question in these podcast recordings. Like, I have done maybe 20 of these till now. I would have asked that question to at least 12 or 14 of those guests. Like, that is my number one question that I want to get answered to. And of course, we will get into that. But it makes sense how, you know, this experience has molded your career path and how you're now helping entrepreneurial leaders. And I can completely relate, because throughout my career, I've only worked at startups, and working in an entrepreneurial setup is you know, very exciting. You know, it keeps your energy up. So I can completely relate. Now, getting into some of the themes, like I said, you know, that I wanted to ask you about, and given that, you know, you work with so many leaders, tell us something about leadership development that most organizations, most leaders don't know or consistently get wrong.
Very simple. And I would say leadership and management, because they're really important and they're separate. They go together.
Yep.
But some leaders are terrible managers. And that is okay to a certain extent. So there's a couple of things around this. To identify whether you are a natural leader or a natural manager or both is really important, especially if you're a natural manager. So what I mean by that is natural managers automatically think as a manager would. Okay. And there's a huge amount of people in management roles who are not natural managers. And that can be because they want the career progression, but also it's because they have a lot of experience in their field.
Yes.
They know their field, and they are asked to go and be the manager.
Exactly.
Or they see that promotion as part of their career pathway, but actually it's taking them into an area where they are completely unprepared to do that role. So I would say the thing is, leadership and management is not a role. It's a skill set.
Correct.
So I had an example with someone I spoke to yesterday. She is a really good salesperson. 15 years as a really good salesperson. Guess what? She gets promoted to be a sales manager. And then she calls me because I'm failing. And I said, have you had any management experience before? No. Have you had any training before? No. Have you learned to understand how people think and how to motivate and influence and communicate and negotiate with them? No. So she's been thrown herself and her boss through her under the bus because she's the best in what she knows, but that's not the same job.
Got it.
So it's a completely different job. And so many people who are really good at what they do with their expert knowledge go into that, and they're not natural managers. They don't think like natural managers, and they don't have any knowledge of how to do that and any skills training. So that is working out whether people are natural leaders and natural managers the first place, because then you know what sort of training they need to develop their natural skills. Or you think this person needs to run this team because they're the expert, the technical expert, and this team does need a technical expert to run it, but they are very, very short on managerial or people skills. And the team, rather than gets better because they've got the most experienced person, actually becomes less productive. So that's how teams can underperform. Does it make sense?
No, it definitely makes sense. And I totally agree with you. You're almost, and this is the case at least with, you know, the smaller and growing organizations where, you know, you're almost thrust into the role of being a manager. You are a superb individual contributor. And then, of course, you have to expand the team as the business is growing. And you are expected to hire, you know, a couple of people, and then it's four people, and then it's 10 people, and you're by default the manager, right? So,
yeah,
like you said, you know, there is no work that is done on, you know, upskilling them in terms of managerial skills. But one interesting thing that you said there is, not all leaders are managers, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. Is it the other way around also? Like, you know, you read stuff and you consistently hear this, then, you know, you don't have to be a manager. You have to become leader of people. So do you think all managers need to be, no?
Okay, yeah. So a totally, well, good point you picked up on. I believe that really good entrepreneurial leaders don't have to be good managers. Mm-hmm. As long as they've got really good managers around them who can take their ideas out of their head and say, boss, go away. Let me take this. Let me organize it. Let me turn it into what you want me to do. But leave me alone. So this is when you're talking about an entrepreneurial person, and the entrepreneur who starts the business, makes it happen. They're innovative. They're highly commercial. They are very product, have great product knowledge. Leave them being the leader of the company moving forward. But then they need really good managers. And the managers need to be able to manage upwards and tell the entrepreneur, go off and do what you're really good at, but let us make this work and grow for you. So I do teach leaders how to manage their managers. I call it light touch. And I teach you enough to manage your managers so they actually do what you want. But the other way around, as you pointed out, managers always need to be leaders too. So managers need to be leaders and managers. Now, it's quite rare that leaders shouldn't learn how to manage. But if you're a really good leader, very entrepreneurial, sometimes it really does get in the way. And this is why a lot of businesses fail, because it gets bigger, more complex, and that leader ends up not doing what they're best at. But managers need to lead and to manage, and they're two different skills. So there's a lot to learn. I have one other thing, if I just want to say on this. This is something, just answer your first question about something that leaders and managers don't often pay attention to. Your team talk about you all the time and your skills, but they'll never talk to you about it to your face. They're judging you all the time. And if you remember that, what often, if you think that you are a good manager or a good leader, go and ask your staff, because they'll tell you. But they'll be too scared to tell you, but they talk about you all the time.
Yeah. Even as you say it, I'm now imagining my team members, you know, huddling together on a call and talking about me, which is slightly scary.
But that's actually good if you remember that. Because what we often do is we're up in this vaulted place, thinking we know everything, thinking we control. But actually, the moment we do that, we lose touch and we don't understand how our team are working, and therefore we are not then managing, leading well. Your team are talking about you to their spouse and to their friends. And if you knew what they were really saying, it can be a bit humbling.
Yep.
You're up at this level, you're the boss. But the moment you actually go, wow, is that what they're really saying? I'm not doing as good a job as I could, then you're going to get better and better, and your team's going to get better and better results. So,
yeah, that's a very, very interesting mental model sort of to follow. You know, whenever you're talking to them or whenever you are dictating things to them, keep that in mind. You know, they are going to be talking about this. This exact situation at some point later. But, you know, talking about managing people within a team, of course, each person has their own dreams and goals. This is not just work-related, right? They have personal goals as well, career goals. And then, of course, within the company, they also see, they have to hit, of course, the goals that have been told to them and other goals as well. So how do you sort of manage this situation where, you know, you want them together to be working towards, in most cases, which is bottom line of the company, right? Revenue.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they have their own personal goals and career goals as well. How do you sort of manage this? I don't know if it's a dichotomy, but yeah, I'll leave it up to you.
You have to, if you want. Okay, so this is about leading and managing again. Leaders may get the title. Well, rarely do people get the title of being a leader. Okay, yes. They get the title of being a manager.
Manager.
But if you think about it, leaders are people that people want to follow.
Yep.
But often what happens is we have a position and we say, well, you're following me because I'm the boss. Mm-hmm. Your job is to make them want to follow you because you can help them be successful. You can give them autonomy. You can make them feel like they're doing a good job, that they're worthwhile, they have a career pathway. And if you can do that, then they will stay as long as what your company is offering actually helps them in the career pathway. They might grow out of it, obviously. Okay. So the first thing is you've got to know them as the individual. So the first thing I always say is, and the first thing I teach is not leadership and management theory. It's understanding how people think, why they make decisions, what motivates them. If you don't understand people, you can't lead them and you can't manage them because you can't understand why they made that decision, why they chose to do that thing compared to something else, why they would be enthusiastic about some change or not. So deeply understanding people is the first thing. Hence, all the way back to why people make decisions, why they sabotage themselves, why they get motivated, why they get scared. And it's the first thing I always teach. If you can't understand people, you're not going to lead and manage them because you'll be a dictator, or a micromanager. So, and I'm not talking about psychometrics. I'm not talking about psychometric testing where you get a label or a blue or yellow or whatever, because most of the time when people have done that, it's like, well, how do I use it?
How do I
use it in a meeting? Can I understand the conversation in this meeting between my boss, who I need to manage upwards to help them, my peers in the management team or my team? I need to be understand why they made that decision, why they picked up on that point, why are they commenting on this, why have they suddenly got emotional and angry or upset? Or so if I don't understand that, how can I understand them as a person? And the second part of the question is, for me, managers need to set standards. They need to set a standard. This is how we behave within the company. Because if you don't have standards, then people don't know what they're doing. They don't have certainty. They don't know how to do things, you know. But every time you set a standard, there's always going to be exceptions because that person needs to work differently because they have a different role from somebody else in the team. So you need standards, but you also need to break them. And the ability to understand people, the situation, and then the next thing from understanding people is be able to communicate to them. This is why this is the standard, but not for that person. If you can't do that, then you have people who are resentful and get upset, and then you don't have a gelling team. So it really comes down to understanding people,
yeah,
how they think and make decisions, what motivates them, and everything else. Then you can manage individuals,
correct,
as individuals, but also bring them together as a team to work as a team.
Got it. Going a little, this is sort of a much more tactical question, which is, how often should you be then talking to these people? Like, what sort of cadence do you recommend people you work with? How often should you be doing formal one-on-ones versus, you know, informal conversations? And that sort of stuff.
Again, that depends on the individual. Mm-hmm. And it also depends on the task they're doing. Because some individuals are very autonomous and they want that autonomy. They want to be trusted to let go and do this. Now, you've got to be careful they're going and doing what you want, going in the right direction and actually achieving it.
Okay.
Because, hey, I've got a great idea. They've disappeared off in their own fantastic idea. Yeah. And it's not what we asked. So it's individual-based and context-based. And also, is that person needing your touch?
Mm.
Yeah. That connection with you. Because does someone, for example, need a lot of reassurance? Now, that may be different in different situations, that you might ask them to do something and they say, can you do this for me? Get this sorted out. I need it in a couple of days. They go, no problem. And you know, because they've done it before, they understand it. You know, they're self-motivated. They have a high degree of accountability for themselves. They'll do it. But that same person on the next task, it may be a new task. It may be something that stretches them, makes them quite scared. So you can't leave them for 2 days.
Yeah.
So you have to judge it on, again, individuals. Everyone says that, you know, there's no I in team. That's nonsense. It sounds good because the word team is spelt without an I. It's an easy management stuff, but
a team
is made up of individuals.
Yeah.
You have to manage as individuals, but you again bring together as a team. So it's a highly skilled thing. Management is the most complex process, a skill set in business.
Yeah.
Least trained as well. So you can't say this is how I would spend time. So with my team, I know if I can, well, someone's got something going on at home. Something is really important to them that they're doing in their hobby.
Yeah.
So I'll sit down with them and just say, how are you doing? We'll have a chat for 10 minutes. Because they want to be acknowledged as valuable people who I'm interested in. If my boss is interested enough to talk about my cat, yeah, or my grandma and my grandma's health or something, it comes back in spades.
Yeah.
It comes back in loyalty because I'm interested in you. You're important to me. I think you're important. And they say, well, what you want me to do is important to, even if I don't understand it or agree with you, they'll still do it.
Yeah.
So it comes down to the individual person, individual yeah. context.
Yeah. Makes sense. You know, what I'm loving about this conversation is while you are, you know, giving these answers, I am sort of in the back of my mind visualizing people on my team. And you're mentioning a few characteristics here and there, and I'm able to very sort of easily, you know, bucket them into, which might not be the best thing, but it is happening in the back of my
mind. No, but if that's happening automatically, it means it's practical.
Hmm.
And so much people theory or management theory is theory.
Hmm.
It's not practical. Can I work out in a conversation live now with you what is going on inside your head? Why have you decided to think that? Hmm. now I can actually talk to you and understand you in a better way. If it's all theory, it's all conceptual, you can't do that. And it becomes a broad brush and you're not managing people.
Yeah, it makes
sense. So it's perfect you said that.
One more question while we are on the topic of, you know, managing people. And of course, we discussed a little bit about, you know, how almost overnight individual contributors are becoming managers, right? This is a situation across growing organizations, maybe even in some of the bigger organizations. And you have
definitely in the big organizations. Oh, it happens across every level.
Wow.
And not just from worker positions to managers, but from managers to directors, because that's a different position completely as well. Mm. Okay. Yeah. It happens in every company, every size, every maturity as well. So sorry to jump in, but it happens everywhere.
Yeah. Correct. As an individual contributor, you're, you know, very much driven by the execution, the day-to-day execution, and, you know, the skills that you have learned over time, you see them transforming into whatever it be, right? If you're in a product role, you're a developer, you're a marketer, salesperson, whatever. Now, as a manager, of course, you're required to delegate this work to other people. Mm. And you have this constant tussle, right? Where, you know, there are some things that you really, really love doing. And you're like, you know, I want to keep a hold on this. This is something that I can do best. Maybe, you know, I'll have to spend too much time with this person, training them. And let me, you know, just keep it for myself. And I'll work with these other things that are there. So how does one go about, you know, getting rid of this notion, getting over this? I would call there is some sort of insecurity here as well. You know, you said there is some sort of loss of sense of control.
Happens all of the time. So it can be a feeling of loss of control. It can be frustration because I have to teach you to do something I know how to do, been doing for years, and I do it better than you. And even after I've trained you, you still don't do it as well as me. Yeah. So this is really common. Entrepreneurs suffer from this a lot, but often bosses do as well. Yeah. So there's many motivators behind it. So changing it is find the motivator first. Understand why someone's not wanting to do this. But when I'm working with my clients, I say this: you have been in a worker role. Okay. So this for me, there's three attitudes to business, three approaches to business. One's an innovator who likes to create. One is a manager who likes to be in control, not controlling. That's a management style, a bad one. But they like to create control, scalability, efficiency. They're the managers. And workers who get pride out of doing a good job. Okay. So they're the three, and no one is equally interested in all three. Okay. First preference, second preference, and the third one is the one you don't like to do. So when you get someone who's a innovative worker, actually, management is the thing they hate the most. Yeah. It's so against what they love to do. So that's when you get thrown into being the manager and you're an innovative worker, for example. That's why the people don't like to do managing. So that's when I said, I'm not a natural manager. So back to your question. If you get pride out of doing a good job, innovating, creating ideas or working, and then you have to be a manager, you want to hold on to it because this is where I feel valuable. Yeah. This is where I feel like I'm doing something useful. The only trouble is you're not doing the purpose, the main purpose of being a manager, which is to create leverage. A manager creates leverage through all the other people, their time, their knowledge, their experience and skills. So I, with my knowledge as a manager and my skills as a manager, can produce far more through my team than I can do on my own. And this is a huge shift that a lot of managers never make. Plus, I want to feel like I've done something fun today. That's why I want to hold on to what I, or I want to be in control of it. And that's all the, so there's a lot of things that a person who is, you know, successful for years has to give up what they've been successful at, and they don't want to, or they don't, or control when it's a bit of a negative motivation when they feel they need to be in control of everything. So actually it's about shifting your thinking to, I'm better at work. It's almost like my work now is to be a manager or a leader, not to be the most technically gifted programmer or designer or whatever. And some people do not want to make that shift, and therefore they should never be managers. They should have a different career pathway when carry on being the expert worker, innovative worker, knowledge base, and keep them away from the management, because they will not enjoy what they're doing. And their team won't have the manager there making sure that they can work at their best. And it's terrible for companies. Yeah. It's terrible. Yeah. I had a team once where it was a management training. There was a guy in there, in this team, on the first day. And he was like this. So I had a chat with him. He said, we were just talking about why he was on the training. And he said, I don't want to be really. And we assessed him and everything. He's an expert at what he does. But the thought of managing people and managing stuff and reports to, he hated. So I said, let's stop the training. We went to find his director and I said, you should keep him doing what he's doing. He'll be happy. He said, he should be on this training. And he looked and said, I don't want to be here. He said, okay, you don't have to be a manager anymore. We're going to keep you as what you're doing. And he went, oh, fantastic. And he said, I'll take back my resignation notice. He had resigned.
Oh, wow.
And he'd been there 11 years. He said, take back my resignation. They created a career pathway of him being an expert in what he does, took him away from managing people, away from managing systems and everything else. And he's still there 11 years later. Wow. So it's that, can you see yourself as creating more value and be proud of that by your skill at making other people really good at what they do? If you can take that shift, that's when you're going to be a great manager and leader. Not everybody wants to do it. That's the first thing I would always look for.
Yeah, that's a fantastic anecdote that you just shared. And I do believe, you know, this is, even before this conversation, I believe, you know, one of the biggest mistakes that I see companies making again and again is making excellent individual contributors who are very good at their role, you know, just making them a manager. And then, you know, you just lose the plot.
It's terrible. It's a waste of them and a waste of an opportunity to build a great team as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally agree with you.
Yeah. Now, leadership and management, again, has always been important, but, you know, has come to the fore in the past 14 months or so with the crisis that we are going through. And I see, you know, there are three types of people here. One of the ones who are, you know, passive. They're like, you know, oh, what can I do? It is what it is. You know, just give up, that sort of a energy. And then there are ones who, you know, show resilience. They're very confident they'll come out of it. But the best ones are the ones who are, you know, using this somehow. I don't know. They're just converting this experience, leveraging this experience into becoming a stronger leader manager. And effectively, you know, they're able to see this convert into bottom line impact, revenue and such. So how do people manage this? And there are, of course, these different buckets. How does one move into the, first of all, you know, who are the sort of people you, what are the values or qualities that you see in leaders who are in the third bucket? And how does the others move from one to two to three?
So answering the second question first is sometimes sure. they don't move. Okay. So they have the idea of wanting to be the leader, but they don't. I look at this and I call it the three levels of problem solving. And the first, when you get a problem, everyone has the same reaction. And sorry for saying this, but I call it the oh crap level. It's like, we have a problem and everyone sinks. Yeah. Now, some people never get out of that and they just moan and they complain and they try and give somebody else the problem to solve. So these people should be never be leaders in the first place. Mm. Okay. The second level is people who say, when you get to, okay, we've got a problem, get out of the first level and you go, how do we solve this problem? So these are the people who are resilient, but they're focused on solving problems. So asking the question of what you need in your company, how many really good problem solvers have you got who you can say, solve this. And they go, yeah. And they love solving problems, which takes us to the third level, which is your, you know, ambitious leader who turns problems into goals, is that these are rare. Yeah. These are people who say, here's a problem. What's the opportunity? So this is entrepreneurial thinking. This is frustration and exasperation turned into, you know what, there's something brilliant out of this. We can do something and move forward with this. We can create a better product because our competition has just produced something that's just beaten our product. Now let's up our game. But the thing about that is, and answering your, this is answering your first question, it takes more time to do that. It takes resources. While you've got a problem of your competition just coming out with a better product, the last thing you want to do is stop and think about how we create something better, because most people, and the human brain is vastly orientated towards solving problems. Really scary problems at the low level, you know, I'm going to get eaten by a tiger, to everyday problems. So about 80% of our thinking every day to day is about problem solving. Yeah. Now, the higher up you go, you solve better problems and you get better results. But actually, goals, when you're going to be hitting goals, is only the top 20%. And you can only do that when you solve the problems. So when you've got a problem coming on, your brain goes straight into, how do we not fail? How do we not mess up? How do we save this situation? Yeah. Those people you're talking about who are resilient enough, not just to solve the problem, but to say, where's the opportunity? Yeah. They're the people that don't fit into organizations, bigger organizations, very well, but they often start their own businesses. And they go, I believe we can do something better because I've seen this problem and I hated being at my own job. My managers wouldn't let me do what I wanted. I can do it better. I'm going to start my own company. But then they get to the point where that startup turns into something they can't manage because they're leaders. And that's when they need the management in who slow them down. They get frustrated. So this is where it all starts to tie together. So the quality of the leader you're talking about is someone who's often hard to work with, demanding, loses their emotional cool sometimes, and they just want to move fast, forward. There's a problem. And I know in India people don't try to show their emotions in that respect too much, but inside they're going, and they go, right, how do we move forward? So they are often the very best, very good leaders of creating momentum and excitement. But that's when they need a really good management team, senior management team, to say, okay, boss, we've got this. But you need us to slow down and turn it into a process. Please don't interfere and change things too much while we do this for you. And that's how you create an entrepreneurial leader with a really robust management team.
Yeah.
So back to your first question, sometimes you don't want the really good problem solvers to move forward to be these sort of people. You want them to go, I'm taking direction. Let me do this, boss. I've got it for you. Because if you have lots and lots and lots of the third type, you're going to have chaos.
Yeah, that makes sense. That definitely makes sense. And of course, you know, we've been talking a lot about these leaders, and we also just discussed, you know, chaos and such. And because of the fact that, you know, leaders want to be involved with everything that is happening around them, time management, I would say most of them are good at, in terms of, you know, having a very having very good calendar tools, or, you know, ensuring that the meeting ends on time, that sort of stuff, you know, the tactical stuff, I would say most of them are good at, the good ones. Energy management is definitely a challenge. And we have sort of been touching on that throughout the conversation, I would say. But yeah, physical, emotional, mental energies, how do you efficiently, deploy them whenever required as a leader?
Okay, so I would say it depends where you are on the stage, because a lot of entrepreneurial startups going into scale-ups are very much led by the energy and the dynamic nature of the entrepreneur who starts it. And then everyone goes, wow, this is exciting. Let's come with you. But that can lead to burnout. Yeah. And I would actually say sometimes I work with a lot of people who aren't good at time management.
Okay.
And the reason for that is sometimes it's because they need to be involved in everything. So they don't delegate, again, use their team. But I always say to people, time management is the wrong name for it. We can't manage time.
Yeah.
We manage our decisions. So time management is actually about value management. What is the most important thing I should be doing? What is the most important decision I should be making? Because we only have this comes back to two things that leaders, business leaders and entrepreneurs want. The first one we always recognize is money, making profit, sensible. That's the business.
Yeah.
Once they've got that happening and once it gets bigger, there's actually something else which is equally, if not more important, which is control of their time. So solopreneurs starting their own business, I started my own first company and it was fantastic. I could do what I want when I wanted. I was making more money. Until a millionaire business owner came to me as a client and said, you'll never make any more money because unless you put your prices up or you work more hours.
Yeah.
And that's when I went, I'm actually running a job.
Yeah.
It's my job. Anyway, so that's good. It was good. I was happy. But that's when my brain was like, wow, what is it I don't know about business? It's a huge amount.
Yeah.
So when you've got a solopreneur who works all the hours, doing really well, they run out of time. And then they can't see their family, their health suffers, they have burnouts, they can't take a holiday because they haven't set their business up to run. So it's that transition from being a solopreneur to being a business leader is what startups and scale-ups need to do. But even in really big companies, you still get people who are micromanaging or being involved in everything, who are not trusting their staff, not training them, giving autonomy, building teams. And they still are in everything, working crazy hours and not leveraging their team. So it all depends on the individual, but it always comes down to one simple thing. If you work out what you're doing, how much of what you're doing is below your pay grade? You're the CEO. You're working and doing things that should be done by somebody who's at, entry level, minimum wage almost, or should it be done by one of your junior managers or one of your middle managers or one of your C-suite? Why are you doing this job when your job is to be working the level you can work at? So time management for me is nothing to do with time. Yeah, calendars, diaries, having a PA to help you organize yourself, whatever. But it's about how to make better decisions with your time.
Yeah.
And that's how you grow a company and get your life back at the same time.
Correct. No, and this goes back to even for any regular person, right? You should be looking at, like, there is an hourly wage that you're getting. Of course, people typically don't have that on the back of their mind in a country like India. In the US, of course, you get paid weekly, right? So people have a very good understanding of, and I don't know about UK.
UK is usually monthly.
Monthly. Okay, so it's the same as India.
Yeah.
But I don't know how many of UK folks, are easily able to tell you, this is my hourly wage, dividing by, of course, the number of hours and such. And then you sort of don't do the things which are lesser than your hourly wage that you can outsource, meaning things like, your grocery shopping or...
Absolutely.
Those sort of stuff.
And cleaning your car.
Yeah, exactly. And you sort of taking that same idea and translating into leadership management and such. Yeah, that definitely makes sense.
And that's where delegation comes from.
Exactly.
And that's when you need good managers who can then take that off you. And that happens at every level within a business, every level of manager, every level of leader, all the way through. And if you get that right, people at the right level are doing the right jobs and doing something that they think is worthwhile. And then they, funny enough, the company gets way more efficient and people enjoy themselves more.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, fantastic conversation, Stephen. I'm pretty sure, you know, lots to unpack here when listeners will go through this. If, you know, people who are listening to this, they want to reach out to you or, you know, read more from you or from your company, which are the platforms or places they should be going?
Find me on LinkedIn, Stephen Bates at Certain Change, or just email into inquiries at Certain Change, and then we can have a chat. But yeah, that's how I spend most of my time on LinkedIn.
Great, great. Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the Shape of Work podcast. Thank you for your time and really appreciate your perspectives and hope. I'm pretty sure, you know, listeners will derive value from this conversation.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.